Okay, now we're going to continue to develop deeper properties of the real numbers, especially topological properties. So let's begin with this proposition. Suppose that E in the reals contains all its limit points, then E must be closed. Suppose not, then complement of E is not open. So there's a point Y in the complement of E, such that for each integer j bigger than 0, the interval Y minus 1 over j, 1 plus 1 over j, that open interval, is not a subset of the complement. That's what it means for complement E not to be open. That means that for each j, there is a point EJ in E that lies in the interval, open interval, y minus 1 over j, y plus 1 over j. But then the collection of EJs lies in E and the sequence converges to y. Since E contains all its limit points, we conclude that y is an E. But we started out with y being in the complement of E, so that's a contradiction. A set S in the reals is said to be compact if whatever the set of all Sj is a sequence of points in S, then there is a subsequent Sjk that converges to a point of S. What we're going to learn about compact sets is that they're infinite sets that behave like finite sets. So keep that in the back of your mind as we develop these ideas. The first fact we're going to prove about the compact sets is that a compact set is closed and bounded. Proof. Let K be the compact set. If K is not bounded, then there is an element x1 in K so that absolute x1 is bigger than 1. And since K is unbounded, then there's a second element x2 so that absolute x2 is bigger than absolute x1 plus 1. Suppose inductively that x1 through xj have been chosen, then since K is unbounded, there is an xj plus 1 in K so that absolute xj plus 1 is bigger than absolute xj plus j. It is then clear that the sequence xj contains no convergent subsequence. In fact, it runs off to infinity rather rapidly. That contradicts the definition of compactness. If k is not closed, then there is a sequent xj in k that converges to a point alpha that does not lie in k. But then every subsequence of xj also converges to alpha not in k. Thus, k is not compact. That's a contradiction. Proposition. If a subset E and R is both closed and bounded, then it is compact. Well, obviously, this is the converse of the result we just proved, and it gives a complete characterization of compact sets. A compact set is a set that's closed and bounded. A set that's closed and bounded is compact. So let's prove this. Let xj be a sequence in E. Since E is bounded, it therefore lies in some interval minus RR. Let S be the set of all x in the closed interval minus RR, so that there are infinitely many xj with xj bigger than or equal to x. Then S is a bounded set. For x, absolute x is less than or equal to R for every x in S. Let alpha be the least upper bound of S. Then alpha is finite. Indeed, alpha is less than or equal to R. We claim there is a subsequence xjk that converges to alpha. Let epsilon be bigger than 0. By the definition of least upper bound, there must be infinitely many of the xj's between alpha minus epsilon and alpha plus epsilon. Otherwise, we chose the least upper bound incorrectly. This assertion is true for every epsilon bigger than 0. As a result, number 1, we may choose xj1 in alpha minus 1, alpha plus 1. We may choose xj2 so that j2 is bigger than j1, and xj2 is an alpha minus half, alpha plus a half. We may choose xj3 so that j3 is bigger than j2, and xj3 is an alpha minus a third, alpha plus a third, and so on. By design, the subsequence xjk converges to alpha. Since E is closed, we may conclude that alpha is an E. Thus, E is compact. The last two propositions taken together are known as the Heine-Borel theorem. And it says this, a subset of R is compact if and only if it is closed and bounded. We conclude with an important result about the intersection of a nested sequence of sets. We will make decisive use of it in the next lecture. First, we give an example for motivation. For j equals 1, 2, 3, and so on, let U sub j be the set of x in the real so that x is bigger than 0 and less than 1 over j. So these are open sets, and they're nested. U1 contains U2, contains U3, and so on, because when j gets larger, the set gets smaller. And each uj being an open interval is uncountable. One's intuition might suggest that capital script U, which is the intersection of all these uj's, will certainly have points in it, but that is not true. In fact, if x is bigger than 0, then there is a positive integer j so large that 1 over j is less than x, but then x is not in uj, so certainly x cannot be in the intersection of all the uj's. If x is less than 0, less than or equal to 0, then x does not lie in any uj, so x is not in the intersection. Thus, the intersection is empty. But things improve quite a lot if the sets that we're intersecting are compact. So the theorem is, if E1 contains E2, contains E3, contains and so on, are all compact non-empty sets, then the intersection of these EJs is not empty. And the proof is this. Let little E1 be in capital E1, little E2 be in capital E2, and so forth with little EJ and capital EJ. All of these EJs lie in E1, which is the biggest set, and it's compact, so there's a subsequence EJK that converges to a point E in E1. But all of the terms of this sequence, except for the first one, that is to say little e2, little e3, little e4, and so on, also lie at e2. And since e2 is closed, we may conclude that the limit point e is also in e2. Continuing, we find that the little point e is in capital EJ for every j, and as a result, little e is in the intersection of all the capital EJs, and so that intersection is not empty. Now, we'll use ideas developed in the first three sections of this chapter to demonstrate the existence of a remarkable set of real numbers that is known as the Cantor-ternary set, named after Georg Cantor. That's a name you've heard many times before. Note, as usual, that a careful and rigorous understanding of the real numbers is necessary in order to effect this construction. So let I be the unit interval, closed interval 0, 1, and define a sequence of nested compact sets as follows. I sub 0 is the entire interval 0, 1. I sub 1 is the closed interval 0, 1 third union the closed interval 2 thirds 1. I 2 is the closed interval 0, 1 ninth union the closed interval 2 ninth 1 third union the closed interval 2 thirds 7 ninths union the closed interval 8 ninths 1. There's a picture of I 0 here, a picture of I 1, and a picture of I 2. The construction continues. Each set ij plus 1 is constructed by removing the middle open third from each closed interval in the set ij. The figures illustrate the idea. Obviously, I sub 0 contains I sub 1, contains I sub 2, and every ij is non-empty. Also, every ij is closed and bounded, hence compact. Therefore, by the previous result that we proved, the intersections of the ijs is a non-empty compact set, and we call it the Cantor-ternary set. Now we will prove a sequence of propositions to establish some of the remarkable fundamental properties of this Cantor-ternary set. Proposition. Let S be the open interval, closed interval 0, 1, take away the Cantor set, that S is a union of intervals with total length 1. Of course, the unit interval 0, 1 itself has length 1. The proposition establishes that the complement of the Cantor set in that interval has length 1. These assertions together suggest that the Cantor set itself has length 0, so it is small in some sense, in the sense of length. In the subject of measure theory, one makes these ideas more precise. So here's a proof of this proposition. The closed interval 0, 1 take away the Cantor set is the closed interval 0, 1 intersect the complement of the Cantor set, which is the closed interval 0, 1 intersect the complement of the intersection of the ijs, which is the closed interval 0, 1 intersect the union of the complements of the ijs, and that's the union from j over j of the closed interval 0, 1 intersect the complement of ij. In each of the sets, 0, 1 intersect complement ij is a union of intervals, so we see explicitly that the complement of the Cantor set is a union of intervals. More is true. These complements form an increasing union, so it is easy to keep track of all the intervals and to sum up their lengths. First of all, go back and look at the pictures again. There's a single interval of length 1 third that we removed. There are two intervals of length 1 ninth that we removed. There are four intervals of length 1 27th that we removed, and so on. So we may add up the lengths of all these intervals in the complement of C. The length of the complement of C is the summation from j equals 1 to infinity of 2 to the j minus 1 over 3 to the j. Check yourself that for j equals 1, 2, 3, we get the three statements that we just enunciated a minute ago. So this is 1 third summation j equals 0 to infinity, 2 thirds to the j. And this is 1 third, using the standard formula for the sum of a geometric series, this is 1 third times 1 over 1 minus 2 thirds. And that's 1. So in the sense of length, the Cantor set is small. The complement of the Cantor set in the interval has length 1, so the Cantor set itself has length 0. In the next lecture, we shall show that in the sense of cardinality, the Cantor set is large. Thanks for listening.